Hello, everybody. My name is Zach Redrup, and you are listening to the It's Not a Phase podcast. On this episode, I'm joined by Within Destruction guitarist Howard Fang. We talk all about their latest album, Lotus, touring across 19 different countries in less than a year, their decision to go down a more metalcore direction, working with Little Lotus, their anime and manga influences, keeping things DIY, and loads more. Now, if you enjoyed this or any other episode of the podcast and you want to show your support, there's a few ways that you can do that. Number one, leave a rating and review wherever you're listening to this. It takes just a few seconds and it really does help. Number two, share this on your social media, whether that be Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, wherever. Or number three, if you want to go the extra mile, you can pay a little bit each month to join the Patreon, and in return you'll get access to episodes early along with some of our perks, or you can pick up some merch from the store. All the links to that and the podcast socials where you can follow us can be found at itsnotaphase.co.uk. That's itsnotaphase.co.uk. And now with all that out of the way, let's jump right into this week's episode of It's Not a Phase. What's up, everybody? Thank you for joining me on this episode of It's Not a Phase, where I'm joined by Howard Fang, who is the guitarist for Within Destruction. How are you doing, dude?
Good, man. Finally back home after like 8 months of consistent touring. It's really nice to be able to have this, you know, downtime. But at the same time, I'm also very excited to get back out there. Yeah, dude, doing pretty well.
Yeah. Well, you know, speaking of you being on the road for so long, I think I saw you guys posted that you did 85 different shows this year. I think, was it 19 countries, two of which you guys have never been to before? Is that right?
Yep, that's correct. I think this year has been the most extensive touring year that the band's ever done and that I have ever done. Yeah. So yeah, it's quite the experience, really. Like when the world opened up, finally, I think we just wanted to take this opportunity to be able to finally tour Yokai. And also, we were just super down with touring as much as possible, kind of getting all the 2 years of waiting and angst like out there. So yeah, dude, it was a lot. It was a lot of shows this year, but I think we all enjoyed it. But you know, regardless, having downtime right now is nice as well.
Yeah. I mean, that's, you know, definitely one way of kind of like making up for lost time with those 2 years and coming full force back after what COVID did.
Yeah, 100%, man. Like we weren't able to tour Yokai. And I think Yokai was like a huge step for us in terms of, you know, being in this band and just having this band sound develop like that. And not being able to tour that felt like a pretty big blow. However, I think we're all still very grateful that we're able to, you know, at the end of that cycle, still kind of tour that a little bit. So yeah, super, super grateful to have done that. But yes, it is a lot, and it is pretty exhausting.
Yeah, I bet. Are there any countries that you, because like you say, you've been to 19 countries this year, which is a lot. Are there any countries you've not quite been to yet that you'd love to be playing a show in?
Yeah, man. I think I'd really like to go to like the northern European countries, like Sweden, Finland, Denmark, just because I don't think we've ever been there. And right. I'm curious to see what that's like and what the crowd there is like. Just from what I heard or just like what I see, a lot of really good bands come out of there, but like also a lot of like really true bands. So like a lot of black metal and a lot of like the more traditional styles. So I'm curious to see what that's like when a band like us rocks up with, you know, like trap beats and EDM parts and rapping and whatnot. But man, I'd love to go to that part of the world.
What were the two countries that you've been to for the first time this year then? What were those ones?
Well, I've never been to Malaysia before.
Right.
And this time we kind of added it as a last stop after our Australian tour. Mm-hmm. So it was like super last minute. And I'm super glad that I went. So it's kind of similar to Thailand. And I grew up in Thailand. So it's nice to have that like familiarity, but it's got a lot of different cultures kind of intertwined with it. So I was pretty happy to be there. And yeah, Malaysia, what's another country I've never been to on this tour? I don't know. For me personally, like that's the only country on this tour that I haven't actually been to in terms of never having toured, you know, Australia and New Zealand. That was such a crazy time as well. Because I feel like everyone, especially in like European and American bands, we always hear about how the Australian scene is. And I mean, obviously, there are so many Australian bands that are popping off Seems like the scene there is really just super strong. So yeah, we were really anticipating going on that tour. And I think it went really well. Like, first time being there, but also having signs of the Swarm with us as well was really fun, because we're all homies. And yeah, it was just a good experience, man. Like, I really enjoyed Australia and New Zealand. New Zealand was awesome too.
Well, you know, going to so many countries in the grand scheme of things, like a short space of time, because, you know, not many bands tour that many countries in a year. Did you kind of notice much of like a difference between like how the crowds were in each country, and, you know, with it being such a short space of time that you're going into each different one in?
It's a bit hard to notice, just because when you're going from show to show, everything kind of blends together. Yeah. However, I will say like the big cities in Australia, people go hard, you know, right. People go really hard over there. It's a very physical show. And I think for them, it's also really exciting when a band from not Australia or New Zealand comes in, just because it's such a long flight. And I don't think, especially with COVID, they probably only had national bands, but also like there was that whole lockdown. So nothing was happening. So yeah. I think for them, it was pretty exciting to have foreign bands come over. But yeah, I will also say, though, the Asian crowds, especially in Thailand, they go hard. You know, they are super passionate about this genre, and they're super passionate to like meet the bands and like see the bands, and just the whole experience for them. Like, I feel like it's like 0 to 1,000 right away when you start playing. Those are the main two things that I've noticed on this tour. Everything else is kind of, it's all kind of blending in together, I will say. I will be completely honest, because it's been just so many dates.
Yeah, yeah. And I guess, like, you know, like we were kind of saying before the interview started, you know, it's kind of like the tour bus is your home. So the only thing that's kind of changing is the settings once you step outside, and then, you know, you do your shows and stuff like that.
Yeah, and it's not to say that I don't try to be present in the moment in each city, each country that we're in, because I'm still very grateful to be able to be there and to be able to do what we're doing at these different places, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And then, you know, you're saying, like, obviously COVID kind of stripped everything away for people for so long, I guess, as well. They're just so excited to actually have live shows back, and they're just not taking it for granted, which is why they're going so hard and you know, really embracing, you know, live music again.
Yeah, 100%. And to have live music taken away from everyone for 2+ years, like, I think it just makes people kind of appreciate live shows and touring and the kind of effect it has on people, on their lives, I guess. Just, you know, being in the scene and having the lifestyle of going to shows. And I mean, it's such a social thing for a lot of people as well. So I feel like having that part of your life stripped away for such a long time, when it comes back, I feel like you are more appreciative of that. Yeah, I know I am. So
yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Yeah, bro.
Well, speaking about the new album, Lotus, that came out a few weeks ago now. Now that, you know, fans have had this time to digest it and take it all in, how do you think it's kind of been taken by them?
I think that people are really enjoying it. And just looking at the overall reception, like comments on what people are saying, I think people are really starting to accept and get into the direction that we want to go. It's such a drastic difference from, you know, when we released Yokai, because, I mean, granted, going from Death Wish to Yokai is going from, I don't know, two completely different styles and sounds. So, of course, people who are all about the true slamming deathcore, that kind of sound, they might feel a little alienated by that move. However, from Yokai to Lotus, it's just kind of like the logical next step in our progression. And so I feel like people have kind of settled in to that sound. And Lotus, we basically are just taking the elements that we like from Yokai and pushing that even further, making popular styles and like kind of, you know, huge choruses, the kind of stuff that we like, and just taking it to another level. And yeah, I think people are really, really like receptive of Lotus. So yeah. I'm pretty happy about that.
Yeah, well, I've seen some of the reception to it. Like, you know, obviously with the, you've had like millions of streams already, which is amazing. I think on the debut week of its release, it's hit a few Billboard charts, which is also amazing. And, you know, yeah, no doubt that's brought an, you know, an influx of new fans to you guys who either didn't quite like the sound pre-Yokai or didn't know who you guys were. I mean, I can just imagine that's such an amazing and gratifying achievement for you guys.
Yeah, 100%. I feel like this is also a good opportunity for us to reach new fans because, yeah, you're right, like deathcore and slam and, you know, the more niche genres, it's hard. It's hard for people to get into. And while we're able to produce an album like Yokai and Lotus that has more digestible elements, it's nice because I feel like if people are able to get into that and then maybe they'll discover, oh, I actually, the guitars are sick. Like, I like the way the drums and the bass work in this kind of sound. What else have these guys done? And like, what other bands are like them? Yeah, I just feel like making stuff that's more mainstream and more digestible for people while still retaining heavy elements, because I would say that Lotus is still heavy, you know, yeah, it's still a heavy sounding album. I think that's just good because it just like widens, like it just creates like a larger door for people to get into genres that are heavier. So yeah, man, 100%.
And I guess it also opens doors for you in terms of, you know, different kind of sounds and styles you can dabble with, because, you know, as much as I like, you know, deathcore, slam metal, all that kind of stuff, you do kind of have these boundaries that are set. Whereas, you know, now you've got, you know, clean vocals, you've got these metalcore bits, you've got these trap and hip hop influences, you know, you're pulling from all these different corners, which means in future records, it's not going to be like a shock to the system for bands that's like, well, they've done this before. They're just kind of pushing it into a further direction, which I guess is kind of evidenced from Yokai to Lotus.
Yeah, man, 100%. I actually think our fans are pretty open-minded. I would say generally people who like stick with us are into different styles of music and they can appreciate, you know, experimentation or like innovations in a band's sound and direction. So I'm really grateful for that because I feel like it's still like a good like support base that we have. And regardless, at the end of the day, I think we're going to do whatever we want to do creatively just because it's like more fun for us. We want to do stuff that's fun. And I don't know, that I feel like that keeps us motivated and keeps us driven. Otherwise, you know, I feel like I would be burning out if I was writing the same thing that we just released or something like that. I always want to be pushing stuff, you know, yeah, pushing new boundaries and limits.
Yeah, and it comes across genuine as well if you're writing what you want to write and perform. Whereas if you just kept writing, I don't know, Yokai over and over and over again, or you kept doing Death Wish over and over again, it's just, like I say, it's not fun for you guys and that will translate to the fans.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, you can't please everyone, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I think as artists, it's probably more important to do what you want to do and express yourself the way that you want to express yourself. Otherwise, like, what's the fun in that?
And this is your first album where you guys are like officially a trio now, is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Did that kind of change the dynamic at all in terms of when you were writing and putting together Lotus?
I would say the writing process from Yokai to Lotus is still quite similar.
Right.
I mean, previously we had Francesco, who contributed quite a bit to Yokai as well. But now I feel like with Lotus, it was really nice because I felt like I had 100% like creative control over what we wanted to do. So when I'm writing, like, I'll just go for it. And if I like it, I'll send it in. And if they like it, it's in, you know, right, what I mean? And like, maybe we'll adjust it here and there to fit other parts of the song or like try new things, but it's kind of like a free for all. And that's what I really liked about being in a three piece, because I feel like all of us see eye to eye on what we want music wise. So it was really easy actually writing Lotus. I think we had a great team as well. We were working with Federico Ascari from Italy, who does the post-productions and some of the like effects and the synths. And having his ear on it is also super, it made the process so much more, you know, streamlined. And also just having Jeff Dunn mix it, super, super sick. Like,
yeah,
It was like a really smooth process, I would say.
Right.
So I would say like the dynamic in terms of like having a three piece and a four piece has not really changed that much. Obviously, when you're playing live, you have more space. So you got to be a little more physical, right? You got to, I feel like I have to kind of, you know,
swing your guitar around a bit
around
more.
A lot. Yeah. Or I mean, just like kind of like occupy more space. So that just means like walking around more. And just for me, I like it. I like having more space. I like the space on stage. So yeah, man. But in terms of like writing and creating, I wouldn't say it's that big of a difference.
Right. So when did the writing and recording for Lotus begin? Because, you know, obviously you put out Yokai in August 2020. Oh. So that's kind of like mid-lockdowns. Nothing's really going on. So when did like Lotus begin?
Lotus began right after Yokai was released.
Right, okay.
So I'm pretty much always going to be writing, even if it's not for, you know, another band or within Destruction. Like, I feel like for me, it's... like I also like doing it for fun. So I'm always writing stuff. So I remember the title track, Lotus, that was written, yeah, right around that time as well. Like right when Yokai dropped, probably like a few months after like Lotus was already done. Lotus, the song, was
right.
already done.
Right.
So I had 2 years of just like writing. And yeah, we just looked at all the songs that was done in that 2 year span. And we just... took the ones that we really liked and just we just tried to perfect it to make it into Lotus, you know.
Right.
So, yeah.
So how does the, you know, making all this material kind of work? Because the other guys are in Slovenia, you're in Taiwan. So is it basically, are you doing the initial kind of like baseline of all the songwriting and then you kind of fire it over online to the other guys and they have their input? Is that kind of how it works?
Pretty much. That's pretty much how it's been done for a while now. I'll do a demo and I'll send it over and then I'll get notes and then I'll adjust the demo and then we'll try to get as close as we can for that process. And then we'll do like a pre-production. So it's basically just going over the guitars bit by bit, just, you know, every bar of the song, just combing through it. And then after that, we will do vocals and try to we really do try to prioritize the vocals, even though it's like in the later stage of the process. I'm willing to change stuff instrumentally in order to, you know, if there's like a great vocal line that we want to use or like a certain phrasing, but maybe like rhythms are clashing, I will change the rhythm because I'm always going to prioritize, you know, how the vocals flow, you know, because that is kind of the centerpiece of the song, right?
Yeah.
So I work with Rock with that, and that's pretty much it, dude.
Like, right, okay.
It's pretty much it.
I guess it is important to kind of put the focus on the vocals, not to say that it's the be-all and end-all of a song, but, you know, the average music listener latches onto the vocals more because, you know, they'll sing it. That's what they remember when they go to the show.
Yeah.
They learn the lyrics and stuff like that. And it's the hook that kind of they remember, isn't it?
Yeah, and that's why it was so important for us to have clean vocals on this one.
Yeah.
We did have, well, we had pitch screams on Yokai, and like that achieved a similar effect, but I felt like we couldn't do as much as we wanted to do if we didn't have clean singing. So I don't know, like as you said, people latch on to vocal hooks and vocal melodies. And I feel like if you only have screaming, the hooks are pretty much rhythmic bass. And
yeah.
I don't know, maybe if like the phrase or like the lyrics are sick, you'll remember that. Maybe it's a call out before a breakdown or something like that. But I like clean melodies because that's like a whole other world you can open up. You can play with different melodies. You can play with different harmonies. And I'm a harmony guy. I love stacked harmonies. So with Lotus, like every chorus, basically you'll have harmonized parts just because I like how it sounds. And I feel like it just takes it up another notch. And that's kind of like the most pop thing we've ever done is just having clean harmonized vocals.
Yeah.
So yeah, dude.
Were you tempted to introduce clean vocals as early as Yokai then? Because I think I read somewhere that you kind of like Yokai didn't quite push as far as you would have perhaps liked to because you wanted to not be such a huge jump from Deathwish, right? You wanted to kind of like, not like you want to, you're underserving the album, but you want it to be more like a stepping stone kind of approach.
Yeah, sure. I think, yeah, I would really have liked clean vocals on Yo-Kai, but at the same time, yeah, you're right. It would be a very drastic shift, you know, going from something like Death Wish to something with clean vocals. It's a lot of change. So while that is what we wanted to do at the time, I don't think any of us were necessarily comfortable with introducing clean vocals just because like we've never done that before. And yeah. Also none of the songs really, none of them really facilitated a base for clean vocals. You know what I mean? Like there weren't really any like huge choruses in, you know, a metalcore fashion. Yeah. So yeah, that just had to be later down the line. We're already introducing so many different changes. I think it was the right move to wait for Lotus, which is why I'm way more excited with Lotus, you know?
Yeah, because you don't want to kind of like overwhelm the fans, you know, like I say, a shift. Let's say Yo-Kai didn't exist and you went straight from Death Wish to Lotus. Like that's a big jump.
Yeah, dude. It's like a totally, it's totally like different. It's like totally 180. So yeah, man, 100%. But at the same time, I don't think any of us knew how to write clean vocal hooks. It took some time to develop that. So yeah, it was just like the steady natural progression that we wanted and went for.
Yeah. So you've also on Lotus, you had a guest spot on there from Little Lotus. Was that kind of coincidental to have Little Lotus on Lotus?
Yeah, that was purely by coincidence. Yeah. I think I forgot who introduced it to us, but we got the news that he was down for a feature after we sent him the song. And that was pretty much it. Like we all like Little Lotus. Like we love his music. And I think I really liked his, I just really like his voice. Like I really like the way that he pronounces stuff and his phrasing. And the verse of, it was on Dying World. The verse of it is, I feel like is like the perfect spot for someone like Little Lotus. So yeah. It's hilarious, dude. I think it's so funny that we managed to get Lil Lotus on the album called Lotus. Yeah. It would have been even more funnier if we got him on the song Lotus.
That would have been funny.
So it would have been Lotus on the album Lotus featuring Lil Lotus. That would have been sick. But
the holy trinity of Lotus, that would have been.
That's it. Yeah, dude. You got it.
So did the album and song name Lotus come after you'd already had him involved in the record then?
I don't necessarily remember when we decided on the album name, but I know we had him in mind for a while as well. So I don't think it was really related. It was just a hilarious coincidence, really.
What was it like working with him?
Oh, it was sick, dude. Like we just sent him the song and he tracked it. And I think just the first version he sent us, we were like, this is sick. Let's keep this.
Yeah.
So super easy, dude. All of the features that we've worked with have been great. They've been fast. They've been like all their takes are really good. They've been super professional. So yeah, we're lucky in that. We haven't gotten a bad feature.
I think he's quite an ideal kind of feature artist for you because if you think about, you know, you guys have dabbled in all these different sounds and being quite versatile with like the metal template. He's, you know, he's got his emo rap project, but then his latest album was quite pop punk focused, but then he's also got his like post-hardcore band Divide Die First, so you know he's all over the place as well.
I think great artists just like to experiment with stuff. Like you'll never see a great band or a great, I don't know, artist, rapper, singer like not push the boundaries, you know, or try something new. I just think it's in their nature to want to try something new.
So we spoke about Yo-Kai briefly earlier. Like I said, that came out in August 2020. So you guys were limited to how you could promote that record, at least like traditionally, you know, you couldn't go out and tour it on the road until this year where you decided to, you know, go all out and hit 19 different countries. Yeah. Do you think, you know, not being able to promote that album in the way that you normally would kind of hindered its potential that it could have had for you guys?
I think touring an album is super important. So, I mean, of course, like I feel like we weren't able to push it as hard as we can because, I mean, we couldn't. We just didn't have that element of, you know, like the traditional pushing the album in by touring. We just didn't have that. So, I mean, even with that restriction, I feel like we really tried our best to push it as far as we can. Like we couldn't make music videos because we couldn't fly anywhere to make music videos. So instead, we did anime music videos, which is, you know, we don't have to be together to do that. We also made a music video for Bang Bang, which is done by green screen. So at the time I was living in Colorado, Francesco was in Italy, and Rock and Luca were in Slovenia. So we were able to make that video because we were all able to go find a place with a green screen and kind of put it together like that. I feel like that was, I think it was a really good way of putting together content without us necessarily being in the same space. So we tried as hard as we can to push the album. However, like, it's not like I can say, oh no, touring didn't affect that album, or like not touring the album didn't affect how it performed, because it probably did. But I feel like it did for everyone as well. So everyone took a blow, but what are you going to do? Not promote it?
Yeah, like you say, you know, you're collaborating, you know, across different parts of the world, which, you know, you do anyway by writing and recording your songs. You're just now extending it to doing music videos with green screens as well.
Yeah,
whereas, you know, not a lot of bands didn't really do that. You know, I think there was quite a lot of bands during COVID that, I mean, not always their fault. Like, you know, they're kind of limited to what they've got and resources, finances and stuff. But, you know, there's bands like you that kind of worked around it and got creative and, you know, it's paid off for them.
Yeah, you just gotta find ways to produce content, pretty much.
And on Yukai, you know, we mentioned it before, when you guys first started like dabbling in hip hop and trap elements and going down a more melodic route and, you know, kind of really stepping away from the slam metal kind of sound that the band originated in. How have those shifts kind of translated live for you guys? I mean, especially on these like, you know, more metalcore hooks, I just imagine they're far more like exhilarating live because you've got this crowd kind of like shouting the words back at you.
Yeah, I mean, live, it's a roller coaster, dude. Yeah, I mean, of course you're playing stuff that's like slam and then you're moving into like a new metal song next. I mean, it's interesting putting together a set list because you want it to flow, but now you have all these different stylistic differences between the songs. That's something that we have to take into account. But I don't know, man. Like, I think overall, as long as the song order is like okay, and we always play the songs that we know that people are going to like, and we know that we're going to like playing, I think overall, it's still okay, despite having so many differences. And I feel like it's also more fun because you get to play 300 BPM slam and then you get to play a song with like pop vocals. Yeah. I don't know. It's a ride, man. Yeah.
And I guess, you know, you've got like quite a few records of material to play with now. Like you say, putting a set list together, I guess can be a bit fun for you guys because you can kind of like mix it up and we're going to put this like really heavy song here, but now we're going to put some pop melodies into this next song and it just like shakes things up a little bit for you guys.
Yeah, totally. A more diverse set list for sure.
And across these two records, you guys have also branded yourself a bit more aesthetically with, you know, the artwork and even like the songs with like anime and manga. And I think, is it in No Way Out, you've got a Demon Slayer sample. And then in Survival, there's a Dragon Ball sample as well. How did the idea of, you know, bringing that, you know, aesthetic kind of and branding, I guess you could call it, into Within Destruction?
Dude, I think Roke and Luca, I think they just love anime and they love just that culture. So I think it was just like for us, we really liked the aesthetic. We liked the animations and I think the music and the, I don't know, like anime go together really well. So I don't know, we just really went for it. It's just kind of finding and like developing an aesthetic that we really like. Granted, I think even when we were in Death Wish, like they were already producing like merch with Japanese lettering, or like there's a Death Wish shirt that we made. The color scheme is kind of that like old school Godzilla like poster with the yellow and like the really vibrant yellow and red put it together. So I think that's always kind of been in like the back of mind, but you know, with yokai, and obviously yokai is a Japanese word, we just went all out.
Went for it. Like you say, not only is it in like the visual artwork and in the merch and your tour posters and everything else, like visually, but it's also like in the songs, like I say, with those samples, the Dragon Ball sample and the Demon Slayer sample. Was there any trouble? Did you have to like get clearance at all for those samples to go in, or how did that?
I think we just took the sample and put it in the song, dude. I don't think we did any of that. let's just hope the people that make those animes don't find out, and then we're good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, if you keep blowing up, they might find out eventually, man.
Yeah, dude. But then we'll have the resources to deal with the lawsuit. So it's going to work out just fine.
Yeah, it's fine.
Yeah, bro.
How do you kind of like decide what samples go in? There's so much anime and manga out there. How do you decide what goes into what song?
Oh, you mean for like the speech? Like,
so like the Dragon Ball sample, for example.
Oh.
How would you have decided to choose a Dragon Ball sample there as opposed to any other potential anime you could have picked?
Rock. Just pick something. He's way more deep into that world than me and Luca. So
right,
if he like, we'll think maybe, you know, before a breakdown or some part in a song, if we think, oh, this would actually be a great place for, like, you know, because like bands sometimes use like movie samples or like TV show samples. Yeah. That's kind of like the same thing, but we wanted to go with, I don't know, anime samples. So we'll just think of a spot that works well. And then we'll be like, yo, bro, can you find something? Because if I had to find something, it wouldn't be as great and it would take way longer.
Yeah, I like I said before, it's kind of like a branding, isn't it? And it kind of helps fans identify you guys, because I can't really think, I mean, I don't know if you can kind of correct me, but I can't really think of any bands within like the deathcore, metalcore world who are like, you know, having that kind of same aesthetic as you guys. And having these like anime samples and stuff in the song. So if someone wanted to kind of like talk about you guys, or like, oh, what's that band that has that anime, you know, artwork and stuff like that? Oh, it's Within Destruction. So it kind of works in that way for you guys as well. Like, and how often do you see a metal album cover that's baby pink, like on Yokai? You don't really.
Yeah, I know, dude. That's like, I love the color, the color choices that we go with. Pink, purple, dude, like, I mean, those are my favorite colors, like aesthetically. Yeah, it's different, but I still think it's hard, you know?
Yeah, yeah, 100%. And that Lotus cover as well, like, just because it's kind of like CGI looking, isn't it, with the woman holding the Lotus flower.
Yeah.
You don't really see that in metal in terms of album covers very often.
Yeah, I think we draw a lot of inspiration from, you know, different genres. So K-pop, J-pop. We will see something that's like aesthetically pleasing and we'll be like, oh man, would this work well with us, like with our direction? So yeah, we're all kind of on the lookout for different subcultures, different cultures, and whatever is inspirational for us, like that stays with us. And then when it's time to do something, we'll be like, oh, I remember seeing this album cover, or I remember seeing this specific look. Maybe this would work well with us. Yeah.
I think I saw Bring Me posted like a tour poster that kind of had a similar aesthetic. And I think you guys commented on it saying, oh, just tag us next time or something.
I think that was more of we want to be on the tour thing. Yeah. I think the comment was like, our name is missing from the poster.
Yeah, yeah.
As in like, our name is missing from the bill because we should be on the bill because yeah. We love you guys and we would do anything to play with them. No, but like, and honestly, I think it's just like we shit post.
Yeah.
Pretty big part of the band's identity.
I mean, if you did get like on a Bring Me Tour, that would be so sick. I think you guys would really pull in quite a lot of fans from that.
Yeah, dude, that would be the dream. They're like my favorite band. So
yeah. Yeah. Like we were saying earlier, you know, bands innovating and stuff. They're kind of like a template of that. Like, there used to be this deathcore band that got bottled because they were supporting Killswitch Engage, and now they're one of the biggest modern metal bands in the world.
Dude, 100%. Like, they're such an inspiration for us in terms of, like, you know, their willingness to try new things, and they're just, like, unapologetically doing what they want to do. And it's not like they're... I think there's a difference between doing stuff that you want to do and just like going for a trend. I really think that they never cared about like being like the most trendy band, being like having this certain sound because this certain sound is popular. I think they just wanted to do what they wanted to do. And in turn, they are now the ones like setting the trends.
Yeah.
So it's super, super sick. And I love Bring Me the Horizon.
Yeah. And just think about how many bands now are still trying to recreate the Sempiternal sound and not what that came out like 2012, I think, maybe 2013, yeah. Something like that.
Yeah, exactly. And while so many bands are trying to do that sound, they're like already, they're gone. They're doing something else.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
You know, doing all these kind of sound changes. That's kind of like what you guys are doing as well. Like you say, from Death Wish to Yokai to Lotus. I mean, who knows what the next album is going to bring?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't compare us to Bring Me the Horizon, like, but because they're a god tier band and we're working on it. But
they were working on it at one point, man. They were working at one point, so
yeah, dude. But 100%, like, just going for what you want to do.
Yeah,
super important.
Yeah,
and yeah.
And in the spirit of kind of keeping things like DIY with you guys, you put the album out on your own label, Ultra Heavy Records. How's keeping like some things in-house like faring for you guys? Like, because I imagine that's, you know, quite a lot of work, you know, doing what a label would need to do, as well as being a band, writing the songs, promoting the songs, and everything else that comes with that.
Right. So I think a lot of the credit would have to go to Luca, who manages the band like internally. Luca and Rock have both been with management and record labels before. So I think over the years, they just kind of learned what the process is like, how the industry is like. And I think they're able to handle it. And we've all gotten like more connections the more time that we've been in the industry. So when we were doing Yokai, we just decided to do it by ourselves. I mean, at the time with Death Wish, the release was with Unique Leader. And Unique Leader kind of signs more slam deathcore, kind of that harder genre. And Yokai wasn't going to fit in that roster. So I don't know. In terms of like the management side of things, like I think Rolk and Luca are just like capable of, you know, knowing when to print merch, who to go through, like, you know, how do we get on playlists, distribution, all of that. So that's kind of their thing.
Right. Okay. Do you think you guys would want to go to a label again, or are you just going to stay DIY for as long as you can?
I think it's hard to say. I think it just really depends on where we are at that time and what our needs are. And and if we think we would fare better with a label, then maybe we'll do it. But all we know is that we're cool with managing ourselves. Like, it's working out quite well. We actually just got management this year, so we'll see how that goes. You know, like everything, we're just trying new things as well. Like as time progresses and as, you know, we're trying to reach into like different markets, like different avenues of growth. So wherever allows that, we'll consider it.
Well, speaking of, you know, the future, I saw you guys, you know, you've announced a North American and Canadian headliner, which is, I think it was your first headliner over there. Is that right?
Yeah,
that,
man.
That's going to be sick. Aren't some dates already selling out and tickets are low in some other dates as well?
From what I'm hearing, like tickets are going well. And I'm super excited to be able to headline the States. I think that's such a crazy thing. But also like having the package is crazy, dude. It's like Carcosa, Fox Lake, Distinguisher, and Victims.
Yeah.
Like these are all like incredible bands. And I'm really happy that they all said yes. I don't know. I feel like it's just going to be a really good time. And we'll see what happens. But I think it's going to be pretty good.
And what else are you kind of looking forward to and have planned in 2023 that you can talk about? I know I imagine there's things already set in stone that you can't talk about, but what is
the as far as I know, just touring. So we'll see where those specific dates and times are. I can't really speak on anything else, but I think we're always like looking forward and always doing stuff.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's no really like downtime. It's like we're always trying to keep the shit moving forward. So
there's gonna be another 8 months on the road in 2023 then, basically.
Probably, man. Dude, we will see. We will see what we get, and we will see what we want to do.
Well, thanks very much for your time, Howard. I really appreciate it. Congratulations with all the great things that are coming to you off the back of Lotus. You know, it's a great album. You, like you just said, you're selling out North American headline tour and Canadian tour. So congratulations, man. Before I let you go,
thanks, man.
Any final words? Anything else you want to say? Anything you want to plug?
Yeah, man. So, I mean, stream Lotus. I think all three of us in the band would all agree that it's the best thing that we've ever done in our lives, period. If you're living in the States, come out to one of the shows. It'd be great to like meet everyone. We love meeting our fans, and we just like putting a face to people that support us. So yeah, tickets are, man, they're already going. So if you want to come see us, probably pick that up pretty soon.
Act quick.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, thanks for supporting us.
Yeah, no worries, man. Yeah, I'll let you go. Enjoy the rest of your day. See you later, dude.
Thanks, man. Bye. You too. See ya.
And that's it. Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed the episode, please consider supporting the podcast in any way that you can. We have a Patreon where you can get access to each episode a week early, along with some other perks, a merch store, or you can leave a review wherever you're listening to this. You can also follow me on social media or subscribe to the newsletter, where I'll send out each episode to you via email, along with regular playlists. All this can be found at itsnotaphase.co.uk. That's itsnotaphase.co.uk. Thanks again for listening, and remember, it's not a phase, it's a lifestyle.